Okay, so what I plan to do today are those three things. We already did the project one discussion. Before you leave, make sure that you give me the homework, turn it into homework. Then the two things that I plan to do today are essentially extensions to vector space ranking to deal with the many limitations we said it has. It's a funny situation. There are limitations, but nobody seems to care about them. As I pointed out many, many times last class, you know, Google doesn't care, for example. But nonetheless, we will talk about how we can improve the ranking of vector space. What I plan to do, really the main big ticket item is LSI, which is latent semantic indexing. And you will see the basics of latent semantic indexing coming to haunt you all through the semester. Okay, basically the idea of eigenvectors of matrices becomes very important. That's what underlies the page rank too. So we'll talk about finding eigenvectors for what's called a correlation matrix in the case of LSI, and in PageRank and authorities and hubs, we find the same eigenvector for but a different matrix, which is the link matrix. You know, how many pages are, what pages are pointing to what pages. Okay, so if you understand the, I mean, to the extent the game idea is that obviously you should know something about the basics of eigenvectors and matrices. I'll assume you know, but I'll also, depending on the total incomprehension looks on your face, I might add some more detail on what you might already know, what you should have known, but you might have forgotten, okay? Because it's important enough, it'll come up in several places. But before I go there, I want to talk about correlation analysis, only because it's actually a cute idea, easy to understand, and it's quite useful, okay? The main point for correlation analysis, it turns out, is what we are trying to do is, the motivation is the following. As I said, remember, if I gave you a query called databases, okay, and there is a file which has SQL written 25 times in it, but no database written in it, no word database in it, but it has SQL many, many times. I think most of you would agree that that file is relevant to this query. Even though it doesn't have the word database, it is relevant because it has SQL. But how do you figure that out? How do you automatically figure out that database, the word database is connected to the word SQL? So that if the user's query is actually just database, you would then elaborate the query by adding more words to it, okay? The more words basically are synonyms, okay? Except synonyms not necessarily in terms of meaning, but in terms of co-occurrence. You know, all files which have this also have this. Most of the files which have this also have this, okay? So if you are looking for this and there is an odd file which only has the second thing, then in some sense it is relevant, okay? So what we are talking about now is trying to figure out what are other terms related to the query terms, okay? Normally you use a thesaurus for figuring this out. So in a sense, we're trying to compute a thesaurus, okay, without understanding English. I mean, this is fun stuff. We already said we don't do natural language processing, we want to just hand wave. And now, we not only don't want to do natural language processing, but we also want to compute a thesaurus, which is all about meaning, you know, in the traditional sense, except here it's all about co-occurrence, okay? So all we want to do is figure out, given a term, what are the terms that are most related to it, okay? Which are the ones that are occurring most often with it? And if so, then the basic idea would then be to start giving those terms as additional meanings of this term. And then one use of this thesaurus is to extend the query. There is a specific idea called query elaboration, where you add more terms than what has been given. And in fact, although Google doesn't do it, some of the search engines essentially, when you give a query, they show the first 10 pages, first 10 links, and also say, here are some more words. Would you like to add any of them to your query? And oftentimes, this actually helps in improving the precision, okay? the next time, in the next page. Okay. Actually, if you think about it, one of the other things I want you to think about as we speak about any of these new techniques is, what is their impact on precision and recall? What is their impact on precision and recall? I mean, because after all, that's the measurement, right? So, for example, if I extend the query by adding more terms, what is the major impact? What's the primary impact of query elaboration? What? So somebody said higher precision but lower recall. Do people agree that if you have more terms in the query, it will have lower recall? In fact, the example that I used to talk about it is all about recall and not about precision. So idea was, I said database is the query. Here is a file which only has the word SQL but written 1,000 times. And you wouldn't have shown it to the user previously. Okay, that means you would have lost recall and now you are throwing that into. Okay, so the primary effect of correlation analysis is higher recall. It can also have an impact on precision. Actually, you know, most techniques will wind up having impact on both, but there will be normally, like, the most obvious one is on recall, and then it can also sometimes help improve precision. So for example, let me see. For example, if I said, you know, think of some word which could have been used in two different contexts. And in context one, it co-occurs with word one and word one dash. In context two, it co-occurs with word two and word two dash. Now, if you give the query Q, right, you could show to the user, look, these are all the extra words you can add. Which one do you want? And if you really wanted the first meaning, you would say word one and word one dash. If you wanted the second meaning, you'd say word two dash. By doing this, you increase the precision, because you would ensure that you get the results that you are actually interested in, not the results that just, you know, not both the senses. So for example, bush, right? I said the word bush, and so it might wind up giving me Kalahari as, you know, one word, and George is the other word that I might want to add, or a president as one other word I might want to add. And if I click Kalahari and South Africa, then, you know, basically I will get more and more of the pages which talk about Kalahari Bushman. And if to the extent that's what I was looking for, my precision has gone up. Okay, so that's the way it can be used. But in general, the reason I want you to think about this, anything that you do ultimately in information retrieval is connected to precision and recall. And so you want to ask yourself, what's the bottom line? You know, how does it improve precision? How does it improve recall? Okay, anyway, so you want to talk about correlations. Now, I want to ask you one simple thing. You know, most of you probably understand this, but if two terms are not correlated, does that mean that if term one occurs in the document, term two won't occur in the document? If there are two terms which are not correlated, can they occur together in the document? Yes. I hope you understand that. I mean, I'm sure you do, but some people don't necessarily. Independence actually means that there can be overlap, except the overlap is only as much as is allowed by independent distribution of the two terms. So for example, suppose you have N1 and N2 as the number of documents in which term 1 and term 2 are occurring, okay? And M is the number of documents in which both the terms T1 and T2 are occurring, okay? And the total number of documents are N. Okay, so if these terms occur independently of each other, then the occurrence probability of N1, of term 1 is N1 by N, right? That's the probability of occurrence. And this would be the occurrence probability of term 2. And if they are actually independent, then the conjunctive probability of occurrence is just the multiplication of the two probabilities. Okay, so you expect that even if they are independent, there would be this times this fraction times this fraction is the number of documents in which they would occur together. It's just by chance. Okay? And as long as the actual number of documents in which they occur is actually equal to this number, they are independent. You know, it's, in a way, you won't really know, unless you know the generative model of the documents, you don't necessarily know whether or not things are independent. One way you can do is check independence empirically. And to the extent this kind of holds, these are independent terms. When it does not hold, they are correlated. If the actual number in which they have occurred together is much more than what you expect, then they are positively correlated. And if the actual number in which they occur together is much less than what you expect, then they are negatively correlated. Okay, both negative and positive are correlations. I mean, oftentimes people use correlation to mean positive correlation. But correlation actually means, if I know this, if I know something about this term, do I know something about this other term? Okay, does my probability of the second term change because I know that the term one has occurred? That's all we are talking about. In the negative correlation, yes, it changes and it reduces. In the positive correlation, yes, it changes and it increases. In the independence, nothing changes. Okay, this is probability 101, but it bears repetition. It's important to understand that they would come together anyway. So now what I would do is I'll look for correlations, and one way is to do it is to actually basically compute a correlation matrix. Okay, I'll think in terms of term document matrix. Our main matrix is document term matrix. Okay, remember that irrespective of which weights you use, ultimately you have a big matrix whose columns are terms, whose rows are documents. So we call it DT matrix, okay, document term matrix. Okay, now the DT matrix can be multiplied with itself to either get document-document correlation or to get term-term correlation. Okay, right, DT times TD would be DD, and DT times, so D, and TD times DT would be TT. This is just normal, matrix multiplication. Okay, so if M is the matrix of, the M is the matrix that we are talking about, which is the document term matrix, then M times M transpose in this case would be, so I'm actually here, I'm assuming term-term. So what I want to compute is term-term correlation. Okay, if I tell you what my matrix is, what are my rows and what are my columns, okay, then you can always multiply it and its transpose in the right order such that you get the term-term correlation, right? Okay, most of the time in this class I'll assume that the matrix is given as document-term, but that's just a convention. You can give it term-document, doesn't matter. Okay. So in this case, MMT is the term-term correlation matrix. That's all I care about, okay? Once I have that correlation matrix, the actual standard correlation matrices are written in terms of M minus mu, where mu is the mean of the data, times M minus mu transpose. That's the usual covariance matrices. That's what they're called. Here we're skipping the covariance part. We're just going direct correlation. So we're ignoring the mean part. Okay, much simpler analysis. Okay, so once I do this matrix multiplication, each element in this new matrix, term-term matrix, okay, if you take the fourth, the ijth element in this matrix, it talks about how correlated term I is to term j. And clearly, since we are talking about correlation, this matrix would be what? Symmetric, because correlation is bidirectional. Okay, so in essence, these matrices are called, the correlation matrices are always symmetric matrices. They're also square. Nice stuff, okay? It's actually good because you know eigenvalues. You did that in the project, in a homework one, right? Eigenvalues are defined, eigenvectors and eigenvalues are defined only for square matrices, okay? So this is a good way of getting everything into square matrices. It turns out that, in fact, oftentimes we wind up analyzing the correlation matrices. You know, irrespective of what the data matrix is, correlation matrix is always symmetric, positive, and square. Fun stuff. Okay, so you start from here, and you have these numbers. So for example, if I have, this is my term document matrix. So in this case, actually, I'm using terms as rows and documents as columns. In the previous examples, I used the opposite. But as I said, all you care about is remember whether it's a DT matrix or TD matrix. And then you know using matrix multiplication, when you multiply it and its transpose, what you would get. Okay. So here is my, suppose this is my term document matrix. This is my term document matrix. And the correlation matrix would be that. Okay? And that would be a 3x3 square matrix because there are only three terms. Okay? And all this is saying in essence is, you notice of course the diagonal numbers are the largest, which is not surprising because you are most correlated with yourself. Okay? And then the rest is symmetric. Okay? And so what you can ask is, if you go to each row, that's the first row is about K1, the keyword term K1. Okay? So it obviously is most correlated with itself. And what is it most correlated? What is the second most correlated thing for it? This is it, K1 is most correlated with itself, and it's second most correlated to K3, and third most correlated to K2. Now, if there were like a million keywords like this, and you multiplied, a million keyword and a 10 million document matrix by itself in the right order, then you would have gotten a million by million matrix, and by looking at the rows, you can tell what's the first most correlated term to me, what's the second most correlated term to me, and so on. Simple enough. Okay? So that's the basic idea. That's the basic idea. And you can do a little more than that. In fact, two more interesting things we'll do before we leave this. One is, remember that I am not actually, I could normalize these numbers. These numbers are basically raw correlations. Okay? And so if certain terms occur in higher frequency, just because they occur in higher frequency, they wind up having higher correlations. But correlation by itself should not have anything to do with individual frequency of terms, but it should talk about the probability that both of them will occur together. Suppose in the entire corpus, you have T1 occurring exactly two times in a 10 million document corpus. T1 is occurring two times, T2 is occurring two times. Every time T1 occurs, T2 occurs. So their correlation is really very high, even though their individual probabilities are extremely low. And if you don't normalize, you won't see that. So one idea you would do is to normalize this. So this is the, you start from this matrix and you compute a new matrix by this transformation, okay? Which is S12, for example, the 1-2th element would be computed as, take the 1-2th element from the original matrix, divided by the correlations between 1-1 plus correlation between 2-2 minus correlation between 1-2. It's an intuitively reasonable thing to do because the 1-1 and 1-2 will talk about how highly frequent these terms are. Minus the correlation, and when you're doing 1-1 and 2-2, then in essence you're now, from this, you're actually just removing the correlation term between 1-2 that is appearing right here. And you get a normalized correlation right now. Okay? And so for this particular matrix here, if you did this, you would get a new matrix like this. In this case, it still is the case that for K1, the second most correlated term is still the third keyword. But oftentimes I can easily make an example where the second most correlated term here versus here would be different. And that's the normalization effect. Okay? It's an extremely easy thing to do, right? It's not that hard. There's not too much theory here. One more thing is the following, which is after you came here, here's the interesting thing. I'm looking for data, right? And somebody is telling me, I'm looking for database as my keyword. There's a file which has DB2, which is a database manager software, multiple occurrences of DB2 in it. Okay? I should say, yeah, DB2 is sort of connected to databases. But it may well be that there is not a single file where database and DB2 occur together. Let's make it up in our case. Okay? It may be that database occurs very highly correlated with SQL. SQL occurs very highly correlated with DB2. So you are my friend and I am that guy's friend, so you guys should get along, sort of a scenario. Okay, so transitive correlation. Okay, how do you catch that? And to do that, it's actually a neat idea. What we do is we'll think of these, for K1, I would think of this as the association vector of K1. So K1 has basically a three-dimensional association vector in terms of its correlation with each of the terms. And this is the K2's association vector. This is the K3's association vector. And I would now compute the ijth term as the cosine theta metric between ith vector and jth vector. Okay? It's like, it's amazing the few little ideas that information retrieval has, people really squeeze them hard. Okay? I mean, cosine theta is not, it's not really PhD thesis material. And yet, you know, it's useful and they use it in pretty much every other possible way. You know, in this case, it's a reasonable similarity metric between two vectors. Okay, so you could have used, you know, some other similarity metric between the vectors too. Okay, the nice thing, of course, is now I'm computing the ijth correlation, not just based on ijth terms, but based on the entire vector of I and entire vector of j. So I would capture the kind of example that I just showed you, which is database is correlated with SQL, SQL is correlated with DB2. And so with this analysis, DB2's numbers slightly improve. Okay? Again, not too hard to do. So that's basically the idea of scalar clusters. It's called scalar clusters. And here is the example. In this case, this was the normalized matrix. This was the original matrix. This is the normalized association matrix. And these are the scalar matrix. Okay? So this will still be 1111. And these numbers have changed now. Notice, most interestingly, this used to be 0.097, now it's become 0.226. Because, in essence, it does, so in essence, the reason that happens is presumably because this guy occurs pretty highly correlated with this guy. And you can check that by looking at this matrix, actually. Okay? And so it sort of, it transitively seeps through, this correlation seeps through, and people who are correlated to you, multiple, intransitively, they will have their numbers increased. Okay? So that's the value, that's basically the idea here. And you notice that you started with a simple correlation, you did the normalization, and you also did this vector space kind of a ranking. Except, notice that the word vector space here has nothing to do with the, we are not talking about vector space in terms of documents, between document-document vectors. We're just using vector space method between any two vectors. In this particular case, the two vectors are actually association vectors. Yes, sir?
Can you tell me again how you get the number?
Which one? This one? So this is the number. Here, this is basically the one-tooth element, right? One-tooth element, okay, in the matrix. So you take the vector in the first row, vector in the second row, find their vectors, find their cos theta distance. Go check that. In fact, this one shows that that's what I did. But you can check it yourself. That's what you do. Okay? As I said, ijth value would be, ijth value in this matrix would be ith vector, jth vector cosine theta matrix. Okay? So by doing this, by the time you do all this stuff, what you have figured out is you computed correlations between keywords, and then you can now use these correlations for many, many different ways. One thing, of course, is you could say, well, if I must add one extra word for my key, for my single keyword query, what's that word? You know, this number, this will tell you. The other thing you can do is actually, in fact, you'd see these words clustering. In fact, it's kind of a, I've been saying things like association clusters and scalar clusters. Okay? The reason I said that is, in fact, I can start clustering terms in terms of highly correlated subsets of terms. Okay? That's another possible way of doing it. So basically, you can start from here and do either query elaboration or figure out how terms are connected to each other. Okay? And it's a pretty simple idea. And in fact, you could do this. You could do this sort of a thing in two different ways. One, of course, is in the IR literature, they talk about global thesaurus and local thesaurus. The global thesaurus would do this for the entire space of documents. So, you know, as the search engine, even without looking at a query, the search engine has like a billion documents and a million keywords. Okay, so the million by billion matrix, you just do this analysis on that and figure out a priori what keywords are connected to what. Okay, local analysis is basically says, let the query be run using whatever method you want, take the top 20 or 30 results, do this analysis on that. And it's interesting to note that they have obvious computational issues. For example, the global one does everything upfront, so at the time of search, it doesn't incur any extra cost. Local one doesn't do anything upfront, but it, so it would wind up incurring extra cost at the time of actual query. Okay. In case it's not already sunk into your head, you should realize that the not all time is created equal in search engines. The time after the user typed query is way more important than the time when all the users are sleeping, right? Because that it doesn't matter how much time you spend, you know. But once they type the query, they want the answer. So spending too much time at that time, can, you know, you can lose. So that's there. That's obvious. Okay, but there's another interesting thing, which is, do you think that the correlations found in the global thesaurus and the correlation found in the local thesaurus, okay, do you think one is a, which one is a subset of other, or are they equal? The point I'm trying to get at is whether or not a keyword is correlated with another keyword depends on which subset of documents are you looking at. Okay, in the entire database, in the entire database, okay, Bush may not be highly correlated with Kalahari. Okay, but in the database of documents which I got as my answer to Bush and South Africa, Bush and Kalahari may be very highly correlated. Okay, the patterns depend on the base data. Okay, so this sort of thing again comes up. This is an interesting trade-off. You know, if you look at the entire world, there are very few patterns. Okay, and if you look at small parts of the world, there are interesting patterns. But if you make it too small, there are patterns which are useless for anybody else. And this is something that you deal with in machine learning of any kind. Okay, there are very few patterns that hold in entire universe. Okay, but very interesting patterns hold in subsets of data. And so here, actually, local and global is making that trade-off between global, you know, full set data versus data which is most relevant to you because you gave me this query. Okay? So one can be thought of as answer-specific clusters, and the other can be thought of as database-specific clusters. Okay? Okay. Questions on that stuff? Okay. So last class, I was playing this game, right, when I mentioned vector similarity to begin with, that the whole thing is bogus because all keywords are not actually independent. And I, to try to make you believe me, I did something like this. You can read this. So suppose I did start with real documents with independent dimensions, but I added a bunch of new keywords which are derived from the existing keywords. So the new keywords is some linear combination of occurrences of the existing keywords. Okay. I also added new documents which are linear combinations of existing documents. So each document is a vector. So a new document would be, you know, 4 times first document plus 5 times second document minus 3 times third document divided by 7. That's a new document for me. Okay. If I did that too. Okay. Then I'll have, really, here I increase the number of dimensions. Here I increase the number of rows. So here I increase the number of keywords. Here I increase the number of documents than there were present in the original set. And I can even do the following thing. By here, I can actually remove the original keywords. Okay, so there's no longer any original keywords. What you are seeing when I showed you the database is, you know, funny keywords that I made from true keywords, which are linear combinations of the real keywords, which you don't know. And funny documents, which are probably made from random linear combinations of the original documents. And for us, the bigger problem is keywords, because keywords are the dimensions. And when I did this, now they're no longer independent necessarily. Okay, and I was saying, well, if you were to do this, what, you know, if the world is to be that mean to you, what would you do other than crying? And the point was that something like this was happening. You started with a data matrix and you essentially added an error process. Okay, then you probabilistically omitted some keywords and then you sent out the document matrix. It turns out that this thing, of course, doesn't look like anything real world would do, right? Except it turns out that if you realize that the keywords are actually correlated, they're not independent, and that they have synonymy as well as polysemy, certain keywords are related in the meaning to other keywords. Polysemy means the same keyword has multiple meanings. Plane. Plane could be flying, plane could be flat. That's polysemy. Okay, the same keyword, multiple different meanings. If you realize that, in essence, the document space that you are looking at in the TD matrix, it's as if somebody took a true document space, which none of us have seen, and messed around with it and gave you this messed up document space, where the keywords are no longer independent. There may be more keywords than is actually needed. Okay? And in general, the TD matrix has low rank, possibly. Rank is connected to what? Rank is connected to the notion of what? It's basically talking about, if you get me a matrix, the rank of the matrix is the largest submatrix of that matrix, which has non-zero determinant. That's the basic definition. And determinant becomes zero if things are linearly dependent, which basically means rank is connected to linear independence. Okay, so the rank of the matrix tells you it's sort of true linear dimensionality. I keep using this word linear. Keep that in the back of your head. Okay, I said the world is bad, but I really kind of am hoping that the world is not truly bad. I'm still thinking that the world is going to be adding stuff and not multiplying, not squaring, not taking logs. Okay, partly we are hoping the world is only this bad because we know how to deal with it, essentially. Okay, we know how to deal with linearly corrupted data. And you know, if you look at pretty much any kind of noise analysis, linear noise is always easier to handle than nonlinear. Okay. So the fact that the keywords and documents are not actually independent and that they have synonymy polysemy often manifests itself as if some malicious oracle mixed up the data as here. It's not that actually somebody is doing it, but it's, you know, the end effect is the same. To the extent end effect is the same, I can ask myself the questions that I would have asked if I knew that there was a malicious oracle, which is, how do I defeat the malicious oracle? How do I get my true keywords? How do I get my true keywords? And remember that the true keywords may not even be a subset of the original keywords that you have been seeing. When I say original now, I mean the ones that you are seeing in front of you. The true keywords may not have anything to do with the actual set of keywords you're doing, because remember, I could be doing this. Where? Further, I remove the original keywords. I only have combinations of the original keywords. Okay. So the true keywords now would actually be inverse linear combinations of the existing keywords. Thankfully, inverse of linear transformation is still linear. Right? Okay. So the true keywords would actually be linear combinations of the keywords that you are seeing in front of you. And I want to know what those are. And if I figure that out, I have reduced, in essence, all the unnecessary dimensions out of my way. Okay, this is connected to the notion of dimensionality and reduction, and it manifests itself in pretty much all sorts of problems. It's, you know, we are going to look at this in the context of text data, that's because that's what this class is, but we'll see a little later in the context of some other data. Okay, and if you get out of this class, you'll see it in context of some other data, you know, bioinformatics or whatever data you want to analyze, because noise tends to manifest itself that way. So you want dimensional reduction, and if the keyword dependency is only linear, as I'm hoping it is, then there do exist pretty good techniques which will tell you what are the independent dimensions. In general, in fact, the set of the rank of the matrix will wind up having an important role to play, because rank of the matrix is the true dimensionality of the matrix. Okay? And we'll see that in a minute. So it turns out that that's basically what latent semantic indexing does. And before I go into that, you know, since the previous discussion is abstract, we should see some colorful fish. Okay? These are fish. Okay? Slightly colorful. And somebody decided to characterize the fish. And, you know, somebody like me who doesn't eat fish, and so the most important aspects of the fish for this person is apparently length and height. And I'm sure most of you guys don't care about either of those, and, you know, unless you are like a born fish fisherman or something. All that matters is the taste or something. But anyway, I don't eat fish, so I don't care. I only care about, I decided length and height are the useful dimensions. So I looked at a bunch of fish, and I plotted their length on the x-axis and height on the y-axis. And I figured out that the fish are now points in this space, right? And I figured out this is my fish data, okay? I have first of all decided that my fishes are two-dimensional because length and height are the only things. My question is, are they even two-dimensional? If you look at that data, do you think it's two-dimensional? Suppose I feel it's not really, suppose for whatever reason you feel two dimensions is too many to carry around, I just want one dimension. Which would be the one dimension you would pick? Which would be the one dimension you would pick? Length? Nah. Height? Nah. If only I have an axis like this, that would be nice. Right? What would that axis be? This is I, this is J, what would that axis be? What is the vector in that direction? What? I plus J, right? So if I take, if I just say, to heck with it, you know, I don't like these coordinates, you know from the coordinate geometry 101 that coordinate frames are relative. You can change them. Data remains and you can change the coordinate frames and they'll have different coordinates, that's all, okay? So if I can somehow manipulate this coordinate frame such that it basically the x-axis is sort of like that and the y-axis is like that. The y-axis would be what now? The new y-axis would be, the new x-axis is I plus j, new y-axis would be minus I plus j. Okay? That direction. Okay, basically it would be like this. Okay, minus I plus j. And those would be, again, I plus j and minus I plus j, are they perpendicular? How do you figure out? Take the dot product, if it's zero, they're perpendicular. I plus j and minus I plus j are perpendicular. So if I look at this data, it's clear to me that the right thing to do is to take this axis as x-axis, I mean, one of the axis and the other as the other of the axis. Now, if I do this, what happens, first of all? Suddenly, I realize that if I were to only keep one dimension, it's very clear to me what dimension I should keep. I plus j dimension. I plus j is length plus height. I'll call it size. Apparently, fish were actually manufactured in size. And I just decided to look for height and length. So, in some sense, by my stupidity of measurement, I have missed the truth about fish, which is that fish, the latent dimensionality of the fish is characterized by size, at least the fish here. Size is length plus height in this particular case. I just gave it a name. You know, latent semantic analysis or any of these things is not going to give you English words for the new dimensions. All it will tell you is your new axis vector is expressed as follows in your original coordinate. That's all. And that's good enough for us. And you can give it names if you want, okay? So, first thing is, if I were to only keep one, I'll keep the size dimension, okay? The second thing is, where would I get these axes? If I see the data, I can see which are the right axes for this. And also I made it nicely enough such that it almost defines an ellipse, a nice little ellipse. Okay, so basically data is like a nice little ellipse. Okay, but how did I figure this out without, if I don't look at it, is there an obvious way of computing it? It turns out that these are directly the eigenvectors of the original matrix. I plus j and I minus j will wind up being the first and second eigenvectors of the original matrix. Okay, and now you don't know, if I just give you two eigenvectors, you don't know which is more important. They thought about that too. They basically said the eigenvectors are listed in the order of eigenvalues. Okay, the largest eigenvalue corresponds to the most important eigenvector. The second largest corresponds to the second most important. Okay, so if you know, if you do eigenvector analysis, and you just did it in the first homework, you can actually, basically it's telling you what is the inherent axis for the data. And once you find the inherent axis for the data, then you can find who are useful, who are useless. After everything is mixed up, it's hard to tell who is useful, who is useless. But if you take the inherent axis, then you know which is the most important axis, which is the second most important. And in particular, the way this works, and I'm saying eigenvectors, right? Eigenvectors are only for square matrices, right? It turns out that the analysis that I just did here is called basically principal components analysis. And it's done in the context of covariance matrix. Covariance matrix will always be square. It'll always be symmetric. It'll always be positive. And so it's one of those happy matrices for which eigenvalues are positive. And first of all, it's square. And secondly, its eigenvalues will be positive. It turns out, if you remember your linear algebra, sometimes eigenvalues can be imaginary. Okay, forget about positive, negative. They can be imaginary, right? And it turns out that if you have imaginary axis, then you are in big trouble. Right? I mean, we don't know what is the thing to keep. It turns out that for square matrices, for square positive semi-definite matrices, eigenvalues would be real and positive. And then the vectors corresponding to those are ordered in terms of the largest eigenvector to the smallest smallest eigenvalue. Now, what do you think would have happened if this data, actually I made it into three-dimensional data, and I had already said length, height, and, you know, for some reason, you know, for whatever reason, I also computed a new measurement basically called 2 times length plus 3 times height. That's a third measurement called the goofy measurement. Okay, goofiness of the fish. And goofiness of the fish is 2 times height, length plus 3 times height. So now I gave you three dimensions. Has the fish changed? No. Am I really computing anything that's not known before? No. But would you know that? No. You would get a three-dimensional data now. Right? So you'll get a three-dimensional data, and you're going to do covariance analysis in this three-dimensional matrix, 3x3 matrix. What will happen then? What do you think will happen? It will also have eigenvalues, but one of them would be 0. It'll tell you that you really don't have three dimensions, you only have two dimensions. Okay? So the same idea works. If you just know how to compute eigenvalues and eigenvectors, it'll tell you what that if in fact that the when I did this, when I did a third feature to be 2 times length plus 3 times height, in essence, I have made a new matrix which is linearly dependent, which has rows that are linearly dependent on other rows, right? And so its rank is actually not 2. Its rank is less than, I mean, its rank is not 3. Its rank is less than 3. And when you do the eigenvalues, you'll find that in fact, its rank is 2. And not only is its rank 2, rank essentially is the number of non-zero eigenvalues for square matrices. All of this is for square matrices, okay? Number of non-zero eigenvalues. And So if you compute the eigenvalues and you count the number of non-zero eigenvalues, that's the rank or the true dimensionality of the data. And in this case, actually, it is two-dimensional data. And even that, you can also talk about within the two dimensions, within the true dimensions, which are two here, okay, which are more important. If I must cut this down to k dimensions, what dimension should I get rid of? And it tells you that if lambda, if you have m eigenvalues, which are non-zero, m greater than k, and you want only k, take the first k, and take only those directions, and take the projection of the data into this k-dimensional space, and you are in business. It's a beautiful idea. If only you figure out, you know, if to the extent you know all this stuff about eigenvalues, eigenvectors, it's a great way of using them now. Okay. Now, furthermore, one other important thing that it's actually doing here, another important thing it's doing here is, you know, I said, look, if you have to keep only one of these dimensions, keep this. And you agreed. Yeah, it's obvious. You know, the picture looks nice and, you know, red, and it's clear that Rao is right. The question is, what does your program know? What is it actually maximizing in trying to decide which dimension to keep? It turns out that what we are interested in finding out in the PCA, in this kind of analysis, what you are maximizing is the variance of the data. Okay? If you were to project this data onto this axis, if you were to project this data into this axis, right, it has high variance in that dimension. So you can differentiate which data point corresponds, which projected data point might correspond to which real data point. If you project it all to this, it has lower variance because the data doesn't vary that much in this dimension. In fact, I would submit to you that in terms of what is more important as a dimension, what's a more important dimension, I believe that you all agree, if you think about it, that the important dimensions are those that capture the variance of the data. Okay, for example, I have features for you guys. Okay, one of the features is alive. Okay, is that a useful feature? For this data, not very good, because I think most of you are alive. It doesn't differentiate any of you. Okay, so I'm trying to decide based on the features whether to give you good grade or bad grade. You know, alive is a useless feature. Okay, smart may be a good feature, for example. Okay, and so what we are looking for is, what are the dimensions which capture the variance of the data? And if you're reducing it, if you're reducing the dimensionality, you're taking the projection of the data into the lower dimensional space, and you want to take that lower dimensional space, which increases the spread, which captures as much of the spread of the data as possible. That's basically the intuition that's going on here. Okay? If you understand this for fish, right? And in fact, there's a nice little thing. You can even see if you only keep, it turns out that the eigenvalues for this data matrix are 1.75 and 0.25. If you were to do this, if you were to take this actual matrix and took the covariance matrix and computed the eigenvalues for that, you would get 1.75 and 0.25. So this is 1.75, this is 0.25, so this is much smaller in importance than this. And if you want to ask yourself, what is the percentage of variance of the data you are able to capture by just keeping this dimension? Okay? Just keeping this dimension. That would be 1.75, which is the eigenvalue that you kept, divided by the total sum of the eigenvalues, 1.75 plus 0.25, which is 2. So 1.75 by 2, which is 87.5% of the variance of the data, is being captured if you were to just keep the first one. If you were to keep the other one alone, then you would have 0.25 divided by 2. And you can do this for larger number of dimensions. Okay? Okay, if you can do this for fish, why can't we do it for documents? That's it. We should be able to do it for documents. Only a little small thing, which is document term matrix that you start with is not a square matrix. Okay? So what we would look at is essentially a decomposition. So for square matrices, there is an obvious decomposition of the square matrix, okay, which is in its eigen decomposition. Okay? I want to ask you the following thing. So if you have a square matrix, right, M, and I basically if I do eigen vector decomposition of this matrix, I would say get V lambda U transpose. Okay? You remember this stuff, right? And V and U are orthogonal matrices, orthonormal matrices. Okay? That means if you take U times U transpose or V times V transpose, you would get what? Okay? Now, this is the lambda. These are the list of eigenvalues. It's a diagonal matrix. Here's my question. What is this telling you in a geometric sense? What is the eigen decomposition telling us in a geometric sense? To answer that, think about what happens if you were to multiply a vector by a matrix. Think of a two-dimensional matrix and a two-dimensional vector. If you multiply a vector by a matrix, in general what happens is the new matrix is a rotated, translated version of the old vector. Rotated and translated version of the old vector. For general matrices, okay, M times, for general vectors, you know, M times V is V dash, where V dash is a rotated, translated version of V. For eigenvectors, what happens? M times V is lambda times V. It just became bigger. Scaled, that's all. The vector just got scaled. So an eigenvector of a matrix, so matrices basically keep rotating vectors. If you apply them to vectors, they just rotate, translate them into other parts of the space. Except for eigenvectors. For eigenvectors, they only make their sizes larger. So in some sense, you should keep that in mind, that basically the background on eigenvectors is those are the dimensions, the eigenvector directions are the dimensions in which this matrix is only scaling the data. In those dimensions, the vector is only scaling the data. It's not rotating. And this also explains to you why if you take any random vector and multiply it by a matrix, as you did in the first homework, and keep on multiplying it and normalizing the vector, sooner or later you would get to what? The primary eigenvector. Why? Because you can think of any random vector in terms of its projections to all the eigen dimensions. Okay? And the matrix multiplication is taking this eigen dimension, increasing it by lambda 1, this dimension by lambda 2, this dimension by lambda 3. And so, if originally it was a simple unit vector, after this, now it has more of this side, little less of these sides. Now you again make it a unit vector. Now it's no longer a unit vector in the original direction. It's slightly more into this direction. And you keep doing this after a while, you get the primary eigenvector. That's what is happening. This is basically what you guys did, right, in the first homework. When you multiply a matrix, this is important intuition to have. When you multiply a matrix, in essence, it's extending the vector differently in different eigen dimensions. And the primary eigen dimensions, it keeps extending it more than other dimensions. And of course, the entire result vector is now all these three components together, which would be some rotated, translated version of the old vector. Rotated and scaled version of the old vector. Not translated, rotated and scaled. That's more important. Okay? So that's something to keep in mind. And one of the things that, let me see. So what for the term data matrix that we have in the text data, you have, it's an unsquare matrix, so it doesn't have an eigen decomposition. Okay? So instead, what it has is this thing called, by the way, this is the eigen slide. If you understand this slide, you understood LSI. And so I conveniently brought this up now. So hopefully I'll bring it up again next week. But let me say it quickly once so that I'll feel good that I have brought it up, and then next week we'll again talk. So basically what we do is there is this idea called singular value decomposition, which works for any matrix. Matrices can be, you know, decomposed in many different ways, and all decompositions of matrices somehow will wind up having a diagonal matrix somewhere. And whenever you have a diagonal matrix, you know that you are just scaling in those dimensions. Okay. For any random matrix which is non-square, you can compute what is called a singular value decomposition, SVD, okay, such that, I'll just go in the term document mode for now. So you have the document and this is the term. Think of it as a DT matrix, D times T matrix. Okay. When you do SVD, and I'll tell you how to do SVD a little later, you would get three matrices which look suspiciously like the eigen decomposition. This is DF, document times F. So the D is the document, F is something called factors. Think of the factors as the true dimension vectors of this particular data. Okay? So DF times FF times FT. If you just do dimension analysis, DF times FF will be DF, and DF times FT will be DT. So you'll get the DT back. Okay, it's actually, if you get confused syntactically, this is a nice way to remember. You know, you start with a DT matrix, and it gets split into three matrices, DF times FF times FT. And now this one, remember, is actually a TF matrix transposed so that it becomes FT matrix. So normally this is why it's written as DF times FF times TF transpose matrix. It looks almost in the same syntactic form as the eigenvalue matrix. It turns out that this is a diagonal matrix such that from the top to bottom, the diagonal elements are the things like eigenvalues, except they're not eigenvalues, they're called singular values. Okay? And the game you play is that these singular values are, what did I say? The singular values essentially are the eigenvalues, are the eigenvalues of either DT times TD or TD times DT. See, if you don't have a square matrix, you can make it into a square matrix by taking correlations, correlation matrices. And correlation matrices will be square. Okay? Except they are now, in some sense, you are multiplying the data by itself, in a sense, right? So it turns out that the singular values are the eigenvalues of these square matrices, of these correlation matrices. And everything else holds, that the important values are higher up, less important values are lower down. And the way you would take this matrix decomposition, and if you want to consider a k-rank approximation, that is a k-dimensional approximation to this big matrix, what you would do is you would only take the k-dimensional submatrix of this square matrix. Make everything else zeros. Make everything else zeros. Then multiply it out. You would get k-dimensional approximation of the original matrix. And the intuition for this basically holds from the discussion that I just did earlier. Because the more important eigenvalues are higher up, then less ones are lower down. So if you want to take k-dimensional, take the first k. Okay? One slide, and you really will get to go home. I'll do all this again next time. It turns out, remember that the database and the statistics documents that we were talking about? So five of them, the first five were database documents, the second five are statistics documents. And you and I know this, but they have pretty much all the same terms, but in different frequencies. If you were to do that sort of singular value decomposition on this matrix, and just take the two dimensions, the most important two dimensions of the data. This is actually 10 dimensional data, right? It's like 10 by 6 dimensional data, okay? If you only take two most important dimensions, which are the first two singular values, and then plot this as the first component, plus this as the second component, and if you were to translate these documents into this project into this space, and I'll tell you how to do it, all I want you to see and marvel at the fact that D1 to D5 came like this, D6 to D10 went like that. Nicely clustered. What's more interesting, if I make up new documents, two new documents, and I think I just have that, two new documents, one document, D1, is a document containing the word database 50 times. Nothing else, just the word document database 50 times. And D2 contains the word SQL 50 times. What's the cosine similarity between D1 and D2? What's the cosine similarity? You must think very well in the last few minutes in my class. No. Zero, because they have nothing in common. You know, one has only databases, everything else is zero. The other has only SQL, everything else is zero. What do you think is the similarity between them? Pretty high, because database and SQL are kind of related. What does LSI think is the similarity? It puts D1 here, D2 here. Nice and magical. So it learned about databases suddenly. And it realized that databases are similar to SQL. And it did this basically, in essence, by effectively figuring out when you do lower dimensional approximation to a higher dimensional data, you are capturing the correlations between keywords. So if this sufficiently interests you, next class will go again through the gory details of how to compute the eigen, you know, singular values, and you know, more stuff like that. Okay.